Welcome to the Birth Activist Podcast with me, Becky Scott. These next few episodes, we'll be covering the March with Midwives campaign that's currently happening nationwide across the UK. We'll be looking at the reasons why the movement started and what actually is happening in the maternity services at the moment. How can we help and what are we trying to achieve from this campaign? I really hope you enjoy these episodes.
Hello and welcome to the Birth Activist Podcast. So it's me, Becky, on my own today because poor Sam is recovering from COVID still. So big love to you, Sam. Can't wait to have you back. This is a very special edition. I wouldn't normally be recording without Sam, but I think this situation merits it. And today with me, I have three lovely women who I'm very privileged to call my friends, fellow doulas. We have the lovely Maddie. Hi, Maddie.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm okay, but the builders are driving me nuts.
Yeah, so apologies for any background noise going on. So Maddie is the owner and co-founder of Developing Doulas, and she's old hat at being on the podcast. And we have the lovely Verena. Hi, V.
Hi there. Hello, everybody.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, thank you. Really good.
Lovely. Another fellow Developing Doula working at work for AIMS as well. You're on our AIMS podcast, weren't you, as well?
I was, yes.
Yeah. And Paula. Hi, Paula. How are you doing?
Hello, lovely. I'm doing really well. Thank you.
It's been a while since we've spoken. So the last time we spoke, you were on our podcast talking about being an accidental activist.
That's right. Yeah. Still doing that, really.
Yes. That's sort of the reason why we're all here, really.
Yeah.
So if anyone's
the best way to be,
it is, yeah, absolutely. And these things happen naturally, I think, don't they? So the reason this podcast is happening today is because if you haven't seen it, A, where have you been hiding? There is a campaign going on called March with Midwives. And this is a campaign that started from a conversation from the four of us, I think, initially. 3 weeks ago, wasn't it?
It was, yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember exactly who was on the thread, but I know the four of us definitely were.
I can't remember if it was late Saturday night or early Sunday morning.
I think Paula started the conversation, didn't you, about because you were talking about having a march close to you.
I was going to literally just walk out into my town centre with a few placards because I live in the town of March in Cambridgeshire.
March within March.
This is so much better.
I very vividly remember having a little online conversation Sunday morning, sat in my bed, and that was when I was like, sod it, I'm setting up a Facebook group.
Yeah, sometimes the time is just ripe for something and then the momentum just flows completely organically because everyone is so ready for it. And I think that's what's happened here, hasn't it?
Yeah. What was it that sort of started it for you, Paula, then? Seeing as you were sort of the one that put the idea forward, what was it that sort of, you know, made you do that?
Oh, well, I suppose some of my experiences as a doula had fed into my concern for the state of maternity services generally.
Yeah.
Conversations with midwives, conversations with doulas, conversations with trainee midwives who were leaving, all sorts of birth workers, both lay and within the NHS. So
not just one thing, it's an accumulation.
Louder. Yeah, I think it's been slowly kind of creeping up for a while and COVID's just tipped everything, hasn't it? I've been hearing about some really distressing stories of women during COVID times, particularly, you know, birthing in a way that feels so inhumane and unsupported. Unsupported, is that a word? Unsupported. And alone and afraid. women giving birth without their partners there around them. And you know, that is concerning, isn't it? It's concerning for everyone. So yeah, it's just a natural progression from that, really.
And you know, some people might be thinking, well, okay, it's called March with Midwives, but you're talking about service users here. So, you know, should we maybe point out to people listening that, you know, the correlation there between obviously having happy midwives, you're going to have happy families.
Absolutely. And the reason that we're marching with midwives is because the ones who haven't quit in utter desperation at the state of everything are carrying the maternity services on their shoulders, and they're crumpling under the strain of it. And you know, the other side of that is obviously the people that they're caring for, they're going to feel that. They know that that's the case. So what affects one affects the other, and you can't campaign for one thing unless you look at the whole. This is about the rights of midwives, the hours that midwives are expected to work, you know, relentless back-to-back shifts, lack of breaks, a lot of trauma. And that is translating into the care that they can give, because, it, you know, the best midwives in the world can only give as good as the support that they're getting.
And, you know, that was obviously around pre-pandemic, you know, all those things you just said, but the pandemic's made it 100 times worse. And I personally, I'm hearing from midwives that are severely understaffed, working in unsafe environments where, you know, you've got half the number of staff that you should have in a full maternity unit. You know, I don't actually think that I've ever heard of that pre-COVID.
Yeah, in any other industry or area of life, that would be shut down. You know,
absolutely.
If that was a business, it would be shut down. It would be deemed illegal. It's because it's mothers and babies, and because midwives can't go on strike, they can't leave their posts and leave mothers and babies stranded to just get on with it and give birth themselves. It's probably why this has gone on as long as it has, and how come it's got as bad as it's got, because there is always that knowledge that, well, you know, we'll just push midwives until the absolute edge of their limits, because we can get away with it.
Verena,
there's no wiggle room, is there, if you're in maternity services? I mean, in any other aspect of healthcare, you can hold back the flow, you can extend the waiting lists, or you can suspend certain services and say, we're not doing this at the moment because we don't have the resources to do it. You can't do that in midwifery. You can't stem the flow. People keep having babies, and so, you know, some people are saying, oh, it's not just maternity services, you know, the police are suffering and other departments are suffering. But I think maternity services is the only, it's a unique department in that, it, you know, you have to deal with what's in front of you. And midwives have been doing that to an extraordinary degree. You know, it's a service that's been relying on goodwill for a very, very long time. Yeah. And then COVID came along, and it completely bust apart something that was already very fragile and broken. And even more staff were lost because of all the things that COVID brought. They were trying to work and look after and home educate the children. And you know, we've all suffered from that. Mm. I think that a real despair has now come as other parts of life have started to open up and improve for people, but not maternity. And there was a big, you know, not maternity campaign that was really highlighting that people could gather together in a football event, but women still couldn't have a birth partner of their choice with them.
Yeah.
All sorts of stuff that's really brought what was already a tricky situation to the fore. And I think that the despair has really been felt since we've started to come out of COVID, even more so than when we were in the midst of it.
I think part of that is because the government promised so much to those people that were helping to get everyone through the pandemic, and we're coming out of the pandemic, supposedly, and that's not happening.
Yeah.
Women have always been at the bottom of the list, though. That's why this is such a feminist issue.
100%.
Be in this situation, I don't suppose, if men gave birth.
Absolutely. Maddie, yeah. I'm sure you've got something to say about that.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that I think doulas have not a unique perspective, but a very particular perspective, because we see the ripple effects, the ramifications of poor maternity care. We're working with parents who come to us because they've had a really, really shitty time last time, and so they want a doula this time. Or we're working with people whose breastfeeding relationship is, you know, really difficult and challenging. And we can trace that partly or wholly back to the birth.
Yeah.
And we're even working with families who are months, years down the line and still dealing with the trauma of their birth, and they're still dealing with the children who are potentially damaged by that birth. And I think that it's really easy for people to get their heads around physical damage. You know, this thing happened, this mistake was made in maternity care, look at this scandal, this baby was hurt, give that family compensation, job done. But it's much harder to express what we see every day, which is the psychological ripple effects of poor maternity care, how that affects mothers' and parents' sense of self, their sense of feeling competent and confident as parents, their ability to parent their children in a way that is emotionally responsive. It really trickles down the generations even. And so I think we're able to see quite how vital and important this subject is, and how it's the root of everything. You know, all of the other stuff that's going on in society, we sit there and go, yeah, well, if you've got birthright, you know, that's the start of it. But everybody else just puts it in a corner and says, oh, well, that's just one day in that person's life. It's not really that important.
Yeah.
That's one reason why it doesn't get the attention it deserves. And so anybody who's having a baby or supporting someone who's having a baby is put in this niche. There are the loonies over there, those weirdos that deal with birth. It's not really that of a bigger deal. We'll sort it out one day.
But also, it's that, like you just said, Maddie, as to, you know, there's, if there's physical harm, then they give them compensation, but that is just sticking a plaster on it. It's not even doing anything short term other than giving them money. It's not tackling the issue as to why that happened in the first place, is it?
No, it's not. And of course, all it does is make everybody working in the service even more defensive in their practice, because they don't want to be the one who's blamed for that damage, for that mistake. And of course, then when practice becomes more and more and more defensive, actually, ironically, that causes iatrogenic harm.
So let's talk about that, because that has happened in these last 3 weeks that we've been, you know, getting the campaign up and running. We have had midwives and healthcare professionals saying this isn't helpful because it's not me, for one. That's the one thing we've heard, isn't it? And also, this is just negative. It's just midwife bashing. It's just about doulas that aren't happy.
If it's midwife bashing, though, then it's midwives bashing fellow midwives and, you know, exposing some of the really uncomfortable truths about our maternity system. And that is painful to listen to. If you're giving your all, if you are exhausted, if you are feeling desperate and unthanked for your work, for your efforts, it's really hard to hear any criticism and not take it very personally.
Yeah.
But those truths do need to be spoken about, no less, because those are people's lived experiences and they are carrying those experiences with them into old age.
Yeah, and actually midwives, you know, yeah,
well beyond that, those first few weeks. I've sat with a number of clients who've burst into tears in front of me at the very first interview, telling me about their birth story 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and it's still so painful and raw. Those invisible wounds don't heal all that easily. And I, you know, I've spoken to elderly women in the street when I was campaigning for Birthplace Matters, and you could see in their eyes when they twinkled or they looked sad.
What's become really apparent, I think, through listening to all of the voices in this campaign is the level of trauma amongst midwives as well. Midwives have stories of friends who have committed suicide or been suicidal, of friends who are on long-term sick or they've been on long-term sick themselves. The pain and the trauma across the piece is almost too much to hold at times. I think that Becky said earlier, you know, if midwives are looked after, they can look after birthing people and babies. If they're not, how can they possibly, if they're not able to look after themselves, if they can't have a pee or a drink of water, how can they possibly give all that's needed to love and nurture somebody else?
Yeah, I think you're so right, V. And I think there are some very particular things that have prevented voices being heard within the midwifery world. I think there's a real and understandable worry that if we talk about what's going on behind those closed doors in those maternity units, that we're going to scare pregnant people. And I think the other thing is the bit in the midwifery code that says they shouldn't bring their profession into disrepute. So that stops them speaking up. But conversely, they're also under an obligation to raise concerns if the service is not safe. And when they try to raise concerns with management, but the management don't listen, where do they go then? There is nowhere else to go. We have to support them to raise their mm-hmm. voice and to get
this crisis. There is a huge culture of fear. Mm-hmm. There's a huge culture of fear, of repercussions, of ramifications, of being singled out or bullied if they are the ones that speak up and whistleblow in any shape or form whatsoever.
Yeah, and we hear those stories all the time, despite the NHS having a very clear and very good, as far as I'm concerned, appropriate whistleblowing policy. On the ground, when people whistleblow, that's not what happens, and that is not how they are treated, and they are often terribly, terribly bullied. And so they just don't do it because they're frightened. And on the point of, you know, are we frightening pregnant people, I have to say, I just think that's laughable because where are these pregnant people living? Under a rock?
Well, this is a thing, Maddie. They do know, and that's the one thing that I've learned speaking to people that are expecting. It's just like, we know what's going on. Why do they think we're so stupid to not realise what's going on? They can't, you know, just sweep it under a carpet. You know, I've heard midwives locally to me have told me they have been explicitly told to not tell people that they're understaffed and to tell people that everything's okay. And those clients are coming back and saying, we're not stupid. We know everything's not okay, but they're telling us it's fine. And so, there is
a way, you know, it's an infantilization, isn't it, of women. of treating them like children who need to be protected from the big scary truths of the adult world. You know, yeah. We're fully grown women, we're having babies, you know, we've had sex. we're way past innocence, and you know, we're way past all that.
It's interesting noting how my own practice has changed just over the last year, really. As part of antenatal preparation, I've always felt that it's appropriate to talk to my clients about, you know, what to do if your baby comes really quickly. What to do if your baby's coming so quickly that you need to pull over to the side of the road in your car. What do you need in your car? You know, you need some blankets, you need some towels. What to do if that happens at home? And I felt that that's been a responsible approach to childbirth that can be unpredictable at times. But I now find myself in conversation about what to do if you phone your hospital and they're on temporary divert and you're being asked to go somewhere else. What to do if you have home birth arrangements in place and then when you phone you're told that they're too short staffed, there isn't a midwife available. What do you do if you phone the ambulance service and an ambulance can't get to you in time? These are conversations that I feel obliged to have now with every client that I work with, and I've never felt obliged to do that in the past. And I talk to lots of other doulas who say, how do we do that without scaring people? And I don't think we are fear-mongering. There's all sorts of fear-mongering that does go on in maternity services, but I don't think that comes from us. I think we're just being very realistic about the true situation on the ground, because we're mopping up after it all the time. I've never been at so many born before arrival of midwives before. That was a rarity in the past. I'm hearing of doulas being at several a year. I mean, it's, yeah.
I agree, Vi. I mean, this whole podcast was born out of that very situation you're talking about there. And I was told that I was scaremongering people. Yet I was having people call me when the home birth service had been cut, saying to me, what am I supposed to do? I don't want to go to a hospital where there's loads of people dying of COVID, but they're not going to send a midwife out to me. Yet that was my fault as a doula, and I was scaring them by, you know, putting my services out there to support them. So that is obviously as a product of COVID, and we've all had to really adapt over the last 18 months to the way that we're working now. I think obviously that has played a part in bringing us to this point, but I think also it has been really, really, a really big part of actually bringing this to the forefront and raising people's awareness. Because prior to the pandemic, people would often just accept the way things are. Whereas now, people are not accepting, you know, like, you know, a lot of us have seen, you know, clients that are not putting up with X, Y, and Z that's offered to them. And so the pandemic has actually helped to bring this to the forefront. But obviously, you know, another thing that's happened because of that is the severe lack of midwives, the midwives that are really struggling emotionally and physically and not able to do their job in a safe way, not able to do the job that they are really passionate about, but that they're just not able to be that midwife with woman. It's just not happening anymore, is it? Paula?
Well, if you think about what it means to be responsible, responsibility, the ability to respond, who is responsible for birth at the moment? Who is able to respond to the volume of births that are happening? I think what you're saying, Verena, about how you're advising your clients is an example of showing responsibility, because somebody does have to advise pregnant people. What are they going to do if they're on their own? If they're effectively left on their own, who is able to respond to that? And is it going to have to be them?
It's part of normal birth preparation now, isn't it? to have these conversations, yeah. And it used not to be. And I think that's the difference.
I think what's also become normal for us is to have that conversation about induction earlier on in pregnancy, when perhaps years ago I would have said, well, you know, if we get to that point, or we'll wait until later on in pregnancy. But now I find myself saying the likelihood is at some point in this pregnancy, for some reason as yet unforeseen, you will have a conversation about induction and they will try to book you in. And so we've got this double whammy going on at the moment, where the response to the NHS response to lack of resources is to try to induce everybody, which
is control, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it must be, but that's actually more heavy on resources.
Is it about trying to timetable women
supporting physiological birth?
Exactly.
And so these poor midwives are being, you know, often all alone on a massive antenatal ward with all of these people at different points in their induction process, some of whom are actually in active labour behind paper curtains, some of whom are actually even having their babies on antenatal wards, sometimes even without a midwife present, because we're inducing everyone. So we've got too much medical intervention going on too soon, unnecessarily. But the other side of that coin is that there are lots of people who actually do need medical intervention who are slipping through the net.
Yes, 100%. And it is, like, I think, I can't remember who said it earlier, about, you know, you can't control maternity. Well, this is like their attempt to control it, isn't it? It's their attempt to streamline everything. And I think Paula was said they want to get it in a timetable, which exactly is for their convenience, to make it like a conveyor belt. But like you just said, Maddie, it's completely iatrogenic. They're causing the problem rather than fixing it.
Yeah, you think, I mean, it can take 5 days to get somebody into labour with all of those delays, because delivery suite is full and, you know, you know how it goes. And I'm sure that lots of the people listening know how it goes, and the number of staff and the actual sheer volume of work that goes into ending a pregnancy in that way. It just does not make any sense in a climate of understaffing and under resourcing.
And couple that with not allowing partners in until people are in established labour. So then those women and people in early labour on an antenatal ward don't have any support other than those midwives that are there, which, you know, there are few of them. So it's doubling it, isn't it?
Yeah, so that obviously that just results in massive psychological trauma as well as everything else. And of course, the psychological effect on the midwives who are watching all of this play out in front of them, and there's literally nothing they can do about it.
Because let's face it, no one came into midwifery to watch that. No one came into midwifery to just be signing people in for inductions and signing off cesareans, did they?
No, exactly.
No, it's the stuff of nightmares, really, isn't it?
It is, because they literally can't get to that person. The bell's ringing, but there's this emergency going on here and there's only them. They're being split into fragments the whole time. And then the person they couldn't deal with is abusive to them because they're hurting and traumatised, and they don't understand why that midwife couldn't come and help them, because they don't see what's going on. And so on top of everything, these poor midwives are getting abused by service users on a daily basis.
Yeah, it does remind me of that.
Naturally frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of when we, Sam and I spoke to Amity Reid about her book, and that came out pre-pandemic. So, you know, this was a problem way before the pandemic, just for those people that might be listening thinking, oh, it's all because of the pandemic. Definitely not. This has just made it more important that we deal with it quicker, because it has put the whole service into a state of crisis, which was obviously why we were chatting about starting the campaign. So flashback a couple of weeks to the beginning of the campaign, we're all sat there, we set up a Facebook group, we think, oh, we'll just add all our doula friends. And then I've got, I can't even remember the figures for the first week. But if you were,
do you remember, Becky, that we panicked that one of our members added all their friends? And we were like, oh no, you've added all your friends. We can't cope with that number. That's taken us to 120.
We were saying, don't just spam everybody. Don't just invite all your Facebook friends. And then we went through the panic of, oh God, will we have enough people? So it was a real roller coaster, wasn't it? And I think if we've got about 16,000 now, haven't we? But if obviously we're just over 3 weeks, but if we obviously sort of average that out, that's about 5,000 a week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is nuts. I still can't believe it when I sit and think about it sometimes. My husband's like, you know, and I tell him that we've got over 16,000 now. He's like, do you realise, you know, this is a big deal, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, I think it is.
I said to my husband, we've got 16,000 people in the group now. And he said, that's not a group, that's a movement.
Yes. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Things needed to get this bad, I think, for everyone to galvanise and come together in this way.
Yeah.
And that's what fills me with hope, is that perhaps we've hit rock bottom and things can only go in a better direction.
I'd like to say it couldn't get any worse, but I don't want to say that because potentially it might.
Well, we have to hang on to hope.
We do have to hang on to hope, yeah. But I know I don't want to tempt fate.
I mean, Michelle O'Donnell's been saying for 20 years we're at the bottom of the abyss. And he's right, you know, we needed to get here before we could get over all of this stuff, the fracturing. You know, if going back to what Paula was saying about this is a feminist issue, it absolutely is. It's probably the feminist issue. You know, if we don't have full autonomy over our own bodies as female people, then, you know, what is the point of anything? And the patriarchy can use birth as an absolutely beautiful way to control us and to pit us against each other. And so what's stopped us in the past is all of the splintering within the birth world and within the world of new parents. Patriarchy just create battles, you know, this breastfeeding against bottle feeding and midwives against doulas and midwife against midwife. And, you know, we're all just expending so much energy disagreeing on the finer points.
And pointing fingers.
And pointing fingers at each other, that we haven't had any energy left over to really agree that this system's not working for any of us. It's harming all of us.
The unity that this movement has created is the most powerful element, actually. The fact that we are standing together. This is parents and grandparents and children and partners and neighbours and midwives and doctors and everybody is and unions, everybody's standing together. And we've had so much division, haven't we, over the past few years.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into the various strands of policies that have created that. But it's been very divisive. It's been and that's been fueled by, you know, all sorts of interested parties that actually thrive on division for power.
Yeah.
So for us to come together in unity is the most powerful thing that we can possibly do.
Yeah.
Stand in the abyss together and say we are in the abyss together, and we all recognize where we are. That's really powerful.
Yeah, it is.
We should say that although the movement is called March with Midwives, it's really March with all maternity staff, because everyone working within that system, obviously there are more than just midwives who are helping at births. And what affects midwives affects them in other ways as well.
Well, the lack of midwives is going to impact all the other staff around them, isn't it, as well?
Absolutely. What I wanted to say quickly is that it's funny, you know, we're talking about things that people have been saying for 20 years or more. Well, that quote from Marsden Wagner, who was the former director of Women's and Children's Services at the World Health Organization, he made a comment about the maternity services, didn't he, that he said that fish don't see water. And I think that that statement is as true today as it was when he first uttered those words. And I would go so far as to say that it isn't just within the maternity services that that holds true, but actually it's true for a lot of parents to be. A lot of expectant parents have no idea whatsoever of what world they are stepping into when they step into that maternity ward, that there is a whole world of actually politics that affects their birth choices. They assume that everything they're being told is based on sound evidence, mm-hmm. and that it must be scientifically correct and, you know, robustly kind of checked to be true. They have no idea that, you know, some of the things that are being recommended to them are not really based on that whatsoever. It's about the smooth running of a hospital unit.
Yeah.
But to convince them to come in and, you know, and be induced and things, you know, all these different reasons have to be thought up as to why their baby is in imminent peril, and they have to, you know,
come in. And to take that analogy on another step, Paula, I would say that there are an awful lot of fish just swimming around in their little ponds, not being able to see the bigger picture. So what's really been heartbreaking to me since we've been adminning this enormous group is the overflowing sense of emotion coming from loads of midwives who are having that, oh my God, it's not just me moment.
Yes.
Or it's not just my unit. All of those, I had another message this morning from a midwife saying, is this, I've got this problem in my unit, can I find out whether this is happening in other places, can I post this? And I just said, you don't need to, I can tell you, yes it is.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I know that's definitely something that we had locally here. I might work across two counties, and one home birth service, well, two trusted in my media area closed their home birth service. And the neighbouring county didn't. So I actually spoke to the PMAs at the hospitals, actually, and said to them, have you spoken to any of the hospitals? Have you spoken to those? Do you realise that there are hospitals that have not shut their home birth service down? How about you go and talk to them? Because they're doing it. That should say to you that it's possible, you know, in your trust to do it as well. So why aren't you going to talk to them to find out? But they're not. They are in this little goldfish bowl, aren't they?
They've got no energy to reach out, share best practice, do any of that. It's just head down firefighting, trying to get through the day.
But it's like that anyway in the NHS. Having worked in the NHS, you're definitely in that. You know, you're blinkered because you're surrounded by people that are like, we're your friends, we're going to support you, we all pull together, anyone that's going to attack us, we're going to fight it off, you know, fight them off. And it's very much, everything's normal around you. Everything that's happening in that environment is everyone's comfortable with it, and it's all normalized. So when someone comes and challenges that, as an employee in that situation, it can feel very personal because you're attacking my friends that I work with every day, and you're attacking something with that which is normal. But unless we have something to compare that against, looking at the other trusts, then it's irrelevant, really, isn't it?
Not just looking at other trusts, but looking at other models around the country and around the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In some areas, and some doulas report that they're really unwelcome in hospital. Yeah. And I think that the reason why is because we do go in and ask the question, why? Why? What? That's really interesting. Why do you do that? Why do you do it that way? I wonder why you've been taught to do that way. yeah, we ask questions that can make us unpopular. It can also make us hugely welcome, because I think that we are able to challenge status quo in a really unique way, actually. Not only do we see different midwives working in different ways, so we know that practice isn't standard, we also, as Becky said, we have sight of different hospitals and their practice. So we have that unique view of variance that can enable us to say, oh, that's really interesting that you're doing that. I've not seen that done before in another hospital.
And is it interesting as well that those clients that go in and ask questions are the ones labelled as awkward? And though, oh, yeah, don't go in there because, you know, they're doing things differently and of course they know better than us. So, you know, there's no kind of, it is very negative sometimes.
Or there's that fear. You know, I have worked with clients who are really afraid to speak up in case it affects their care.
Yes.
Whether or not that's a truth-based fear, it's a genuine fear. They're really frightened that if they're seen to be awkward, perceived to be awkward, their care won't be awful. How dreadful to feel so frightened and threatened and shut down.
Well, and beholden and grateful, no matter how terrible their care has been.
Mm. Yes, or that, or the ones who know that they feel far too unsafe to go anywhere near the service whatsoever, probably because they've been burnt already before with the previous baby. So they're voting with their feet. And of course, there aren't many other choices to vote for at the moment in maternity care. You might be able to get a private midwife if there is one and you can afford it. You certainly can't have an independent midwife for intrapartum care. So that leaves doing it by yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously there are lots of opinions about free birth, but the fact remains it's happening. And it's happening in greater and greater numbers all of the time. And that is a testament to the fact that the service that as it currently stands is not fit for purpose for a proportion of service users.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's quite one thing if someone has prepared themselves and been really researching and looking at ways to support themselves to have a free birth. And it's quite another when it's been thrust upon them as a split second decision when they're already in labour and they've done no thinking about that sort of scenario. They don't have any plans in place that would support that scenario. You know, childcare is a really big thing here.
They're doing it because they feel like they have no other choice. As far as I'm concerned, that means that they haven't had a choice.
So I don't think that's free birthing.
It's not free choice, is it?
Exactly. It's birthing without assistance.
Yeah.
And it's enforced.
Yeah.
And it's
in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, we really have to be asking the question, you know, how can it be that some women would rather give birth at home on their own than engage with one of the wealthier healthcare systems in the world? What does that say about that system?
So
despite all that, you know, apparent wealth that's going into it.
So how do you feel, lovely friends, about the replies that we're getting from so far one MP who says that he doesn't believe us when we talk this way?
Well, we're allowed to swear.
It's beyond words, actually.
I give you all permission to swear at this point.
Leap.
I mean, I've seen a few replies of what I would call spin.
Yeah.
Rhetoric. You know, we're investing here and we're doing this and we're reviewing that.
Well, there's no problem at all, is there, according to the Tories? Everything's just fine.
Yeah. It's really concerning that again, it's about the defensive practice again, isn't it? So that's seen right the way through the system. So our government is defensive. Our government wants us to believe that it is doing everything that it can and it really cares about us. And how dare we criticise them when they're putting so much effort into getting it right? And it's that defensiveness that's so prevalent in the whole system.
The whole house is on fire and they're pouring a little teacup of water into the corner.
Not only that, but they're not actually listening. It's like me as a doula going to a family and giving them massages, reflexology, all these things, but all they really wanted was someone to talk to. Yeah. So, but I'm like, well, but I've given you all this stuff. Why aren't you grateful for it?
But they're angry.
Yeah, but I've not actually given them what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why we're collecting people's voices, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And there will be a link under the podcast where to go, which will be the Linktree link, which will send you to give you all the information that you need. It's the magic link. But one of the most important things is to share your story so that we can tell Boris and everyone he sits with all the stuff that is actually happening, the real life stories from midwives, from healthcare professionals, from parents, grandparents, doulas, all the voices. So that's a really important part of the campaign, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's so important, isn't it? Because this is the lived experience of everyone who is a stakeholder,
yes,
in maternity care. And, you know, it's about time that the mostly men in suits really heard those true stories,
yeah,
and the depth of suffering that is happening right now. And we have to come out in force on the 21st and show them how many people give a shit about this.
Yeah. That was one of the reasons we sort of changed. Sorry, I was going to say this is one of the reasons we changed the name, because we started out calling it March for Midwives, whereas we've changed it to March with Midwives, because it's really important that the midwives are there. And the midwives are talking, and that we're not talking for them, because that holds no weight whatsoever.
No, yeah, it doesn't. And that's why it's so good that the RCM have, you know, come back to us and said, absolutely, if you're, yeah, not on shift that day, there's nothing stopping you going to a peaceful vigil to call for improvements in maternity care.
Yeah. We have to raise the bar higher than simply that everybody survived the birth process.
Yes.
You know, that is a very low bar at the moment that it feels like we're working to. And the saddest thing about all of this is it does feel that although we want to improve conditions, you know, workplace conditions for midwives, and we want to improve the experience for mothers and babies, you know, actually, some of the practices that we've been hearing about in the March with Midwives group would suggest that actually a lot of units are working in a way that is actively dangerous. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of near misses that are happening with safety. And that's the scariest thing of all. So actually, this movement is about more than simply creating a nice fluffy experience for people. Yeah. This is about, yeah, potentially saving babies and mothers' lives.
And we have those statistics, don't we? You know, we, yeah, there's been all of the quite right outrage about the difference in outcomes for Black and Brown women and birthing people.
Yeah.
Not so much emphasis on disparities in terms of socioeconomic status, mm-hmm, but there's difference there as well. Basically, if you're somebody who can go into maternity care and be ignored,
yes,
then you will be. Or if you can be labelled as old or fat, then you will be labelled. and blamed. So this huge amount of obstetric victim blaming.
Yeah,
you should call it.
How many times have you heard phrases like, well, we're dealing with, you know, older women now, you know, it takes more work than it used to. We're dealing with a more complex group of people birthing. Absolute rubbish. We don't have polio. Even those most socially
Victorian.
Exactly. You know, we're the healthiest we've ever been, which is why we're still fertile in our 40s.
Yeah.
We're healthier than we have ever been. It is the victim blaming culture. Absolutely.
Yeah. So just a little bit more about the campaign then. So we basically decided very early on, because there's a massive, massive long list of things that we wanted to change, obviously, some of which we've touched on here. But we wanted to obviously focus on the things that needed doing immediately, because there are too many to get it to a point where it's ideal. We've got to do a lot of work to get to that point. But like you said, Paula, it's about getting the practice safe initially, for women going through the service, safe for birthing people and for babies, and also safe for the people working in that system as well. So can Maddie, can you remind us what those first 4 points were on the manifesto? I'm going to test your memory now.
So we think that we should enable people to train and enable midwives to stay in the service and enable midwives to return to practice.
Yes. Because that's what we need initially, isn't it? We need those midwives back working.
Yeah. So we need to be able to make that financially and emotionally sustainable for them and bureaucratically easier. We need to be able to reduce pressures on staff and a whole range of things that we could be doing very easily. For example, midwives need admin support. Why are they staying for 2 hours at the end of their shift to transfer one set of notes from one place into another place?
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. That, you know, that's data input. Anybody can do that.
Yeah.
We need to, come on, you're really clever at getting things up on screen. I'm not.
Hold on.
I've gone through that manifesto 6 million times in the last 3 weeks, and I have not memorised it.
It's frazzled your brain, Maddie.
I think just that with the first one you said that about enabling midwives to, you know, come back to work, it is the foundation of it, because it just doesn't work without midwives. The whole, none of the system works without midwives, does it? I mean, that's the bottom line of it, really.
Two other key components in the manifesto are to listen to all staff and service users and their advocates. And this is what we were saying about, we can't be shut up. We can't be told that there isn't a problem. We need to be listened to. And the final one is about fund emergency retention. Mm-hmm. It's no good just chucking a few grand at this. Look at what was wasted by the government on useless PPE. The politics around that, I could really swear. This needs proper funding. So, yeah, listen, fund, enable, reduce are the key points.
And we just, you know, we need to start actually having a pragmatic and practical, sensible view on things. There are a shed load of people out there who could have helped at the when this crisis hit, and yet we were sidelined. Those breastfeeding supporters, we put our hands up right at the beginning of COVID and said we're here. And totally ignored. The doulas, we're here, totally ignored.
Yeah. Or we're told that we had to work for free.
Yeah.
I offered to work for free and I was still cast aside. Yeah. I offered to go into the hospital on a regular basis to be with women in earlier labour where midwives really weren't available to be with them. I was happy to do that for free and I was still cast aside. And many others. This isn't about me. This is...
But Verena, what you know, your experience there is not just yours, because there are other doulas that have experiences.
Exactly. Yeah.
We don't have a poverty of skills, knowledge, talent across the midwifery services. What we have is those skills and talents being completely squandered.
Yes.
And misused.
And undermined.
Yeah, and all those students that were then thrown into like unsupervised roles during the pandemic to help out and promise so many things, and now they're just back to square one again.
Yeah, and they're leaving. Yeah. They're leaving. I had somebody tell me the other day that in their cohort of 40, two graduated.
Wow, that's mental.
Yeah, because they could go and work in Tesco's and not have the headache.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about saving your mental and physical health, isn't it? You know, this is not the job they signed up for.
I did have a midwife message me, a midwife that I know, and say, you know, have concerns about this group you've started, because it's going to scare student midwives. It's going to scare them off, and I'm worried they're not going to finish their course. So then my response to that was, so you'd rather they finish their course and go into the service blindly without knowing the truth, and then they're completely burnt out and left by the first year?
Well, and also, who on earth would think that a student midwife is walking around with rose-tinted glasses
on their placement like this?
Oh, this is lovely, isn't it? You know, of course that's not happening. No. And actually, the evidence we have is quite the opposite of that. Lots of senior midwives who spend a lot of time with students are telling us that actually they're feeling really hopeful.
Yes.
And heartened.
Yeah, the solidarity of being part of such a movement is is really, really lovely to see.
I wonder whether they worry that
people feel less alone.
Yeah. I do wonder whether they worry that some of our doulaness might rub off on them.
No, there are plenty of midwives in our steering group and who are, you know, key people in this movement.
I think that's something that is really important to say, isn't it? Because we have had a few messages from people wondering who's on the steering group and if we're all just a bunch of doolally doolers. I mean, it's about half of us, isn't it, our midwives?
Think about that. Yeah, I haven't totted everybody up, but every person that's in the steering group is admin of the group. So all anyone needs to do is go to the Facebook group and look for the admins. We're all in there.
But the number of hours that we've paced those corridors does not, you know, in comparison with what the midwives who are seeing on the ground, it does not translate into any kind of diminished idea of the, you know, the reality of what's going on.
No, that's true. I think, you know, we have such an interesting perspective as doulas. How many other people in the world could from time to time spend 48 solid hours in a maternity unit? And watch that, however many shifts that is, just, you know, go past you, and all of that comparing and contrasting of different staff and how they work and how the atmosphere in a unit changes according to who's on shift.
And we might not be at the coal face, but we're talking every single day to many people who are.
That's right.
So we're under no illusions or
important,
you know,
witnesses to this situation, aren't we?
So for anyone listening, that, you know, is, oh gosh, it's just a bunch of doulas doing this, to raise awareness of doulas, and, you know, because doulas are so fantastic, which we are, obviously, but we are obviously wonderful. But we do have NHS midwives, private midwives on the steering group, and some of which I will hopefully be speaking to tomorrow night when I record my next podcast, because this is one of two, because obviously, you know, this is our view from the eyes of the doulas, and this is why we set up the campaign, but it's really important to hear those voices of midwives as well. So,
and those voices are coming in from around the world. Yes. The support that we're receiving isn't just something very localized. It's from former presidents of the Royal College of Midwives. It's from midwives in other countries.
This isn't just happening here either. I've seen things on social media the last couple of days. There are campaigns and protests and all sorts of things going on in different countries as well. So it's not just happening here.
No, we've heard from the ICM. They're going to be standing in solidarity with us on the 21st.
Can you just clarify who the ICM are, Maddie?
I'm probably going to get it wrong now. International Confederation of Midwives, maybe?
Brilliant. I think so. Yep.
And amazing, well-known figures in international midwifery like Agnes Gareb.
Has given
a quote of endorsement. Paula, you're sending out all of those messages asking, aren't you?
We've had quotes coming in from people who really know their stuff, you know, people who've worked in the maternity services for decades.
Name drop.
Oh, well, Leslie Page, for example, Sheena Byram. You know, these people have worked in the maternity services and have seen it from all different angles. So, you know, they know what they're talking about. And if they're really concerned, then it's right that we should all be sitting up and taking notice of that.
100%. Yeah. So just to draw a close to the podcast today, I want to obviously get the important information out there for everybody. The nationwide vigils are happening on Sunday, the 21st of November, from 2 o'clock, 2 till 4, I think we put on the flyers. And I will put links in the podcast for those of you that want to come and join the group. And the link to all our manifesto and all our sort of resources that we've got. There are loads and loads and loads of vigils already being organised around the UK, which is fantastic. There's also a link for anyone that would like to share their story. And it's a very short form. You can do it anonymously, and it's the easiest way for us to capture your voices. But if you can't do that for whatever reason, we also have an email address, which is marchwithmidwives@gmail.com. Easy peasy to remember. Is there anything that anyone else wants to add to that information?
Yeah, I wanted to just say that Catherine Gutteridge has also commented. She's quite a recent president of the Royal College of Midwives. Fantastic. And Becky Reid. Those quotes will be coming out soon. We're just working on making them look pretty. And we'll be sending those out. You'll be able to share those quotes on the different social media platforms as well.
Really important that everyone's sharing it far and wide so that everyone knows, because you know what bloody social media algorithms are like. Nowhere. For every one person that sees it, I think there's a million that doesn't. I think I've over-exaggerated that, but yeah, you get my point.
But that's where we need the video as well, isn't it? The video, because social media loves video. So all this listener who's listening to this, if that person would make a 30-second video and ask their friends to make a 30-second video, just answering the simple question, why I march with midwives.
Yeah, and if you're not sure what to do, then go and have a look at our social media platforms, because there'll be tons of them on there for you to get inspiration from as well. And it's also not just about the vigil, because obviously we're doing a lot of work on the run-up to the vigil, but we want people at the vigils to be doing videos, taking photos, recording the event, so that we can then obviously continue to spread the word about the crisis, because it doesn't just end on the 21st. We all go to bed.
I'd also, I mean, that's a huge list of demands. I would also like to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all the people who, in spite of their fear, in spite of their exhaustion, have put their head above the parapet and said, we stand with you. We add our roar to your roar. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to all the people on a local level who are gathering together their friends and their families to stand in unity. This is really happening, and it couldn't happen, could it, without that overwhelming support for just a little idea that we had in bed. We weren't all in bed together. I'm sure that we were all in our separate beds having a little idea on Sunday morning. So yes, we're asking a lot of you, but we are so grateful for all that you're doing.
Oh, amen, Karina. I was going to say, Maddie, your eyes are leaking. But one of the things I did think is that, you know, we were all sat in our beds doing on a Sunday morning, but usually when we're talking to each other, we're all in the bath or something. Just me and Maddie often talk together when we're in the bath, not together, obviously. Seems to be a very doula thing to do.
It's the only quiet time we get.
That's it. Generally, Maddie, yours are on the beach or having a walk, which always makes me feel very jealous when I hear the seagulls in the background. Yes, Karina, I think you put it very eloquently there, and I'm glad I don't have to do that little speech at the end. So thank you for that. That's amazing. And yes, thank you for everybody that's following, and thank you, the three of you, for joining me on the podcast today. It's always amazing to talk to you three, and it's not very often we get four of us in one place at one time with no other distractions. So it's quite an achievement, I think.
It's been lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait to
talk. Thanks for asking us, Becky.
Thanks for keeping us on track, Becky.
Oh, I'm trying. I'm normally having to keep Sam on track, so this is a little harder because I've got three of you to do it with, but there you go. It's fine. We got there in the end. Okay, so that's the end of the podcast. Thank you again very much for joining me. I will obviously put all those links in the show notes afterwards, and we'll see you again on the next podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
I really hope you enjoyed this special March with Midwives episode. Sam and I will be back really soon with some more birth activist podcast episodes. Bye for now. We'll be right back.